you don't you worry. If you were in a hurry, Bob Curry and Claypool. Curry and Claypool. No matter how your day go, they got a fresh new show today. It's Curry and Claypool. Whether you up north of Gardendale or down south past Vestavia, turn up your sound and listen well, cause we got something to say to you. Curry and Claypool, they in the know. Their topics covered A to Z. So whether you drive fast or slow, just sit on back and feel the beat.
Oh no!
It's Curry and Claypool!
Happy to see you. Hey! I'm having a good chemical imbalance day. Some people have chemical imbalances that mess their brains up. Sometimes I have those ones where I'm just happier than I probably should be.
Called mania.
Huh?
Called mania.
Is that what it is? I heard someone on another radio station today. I was listening. I like to listen to competition.
Yeah.
You keep your friends close, you keep your enemies closer. And it's us against the world, right?
You've been doing that for years?
Yes.
Seriously?
Well, sure. I don't tell people I listen to other radio stations.
And everybody listens to the news stations do this. Everybody watches everybody else.
You have to. I mean, yeah. At other radio stations, you actually have people you hire just to listen to the radio stations to find out who's on their air and stuff like that so you can steal clients, right? And so since we got away from the fun of, you know, pissing on people's outlets and knocking them off air and stuff like that like we used to, now we have to be a little bit more, you know, we have to adapt or perish.
That's right.
And so I was listening. And most of the stuff I hear, the crap I hear, is the same stuff every year. Like we were just talking about it, you know, the holidays, you know, so, getting with family and how to deal with kids and overspending. It's the same old stuff over, and it was just repackaging the pickle. And I heard someone this morning talking about just saying no around the holidays.
Oh, I got a script for that one.
Now, and I know we've done it like a million times, right? And
right.
So you're going to have to think outside the box here and be a little different here to make it special. But I am guilty of this, and I know I'm guilty of this, because I don't think I'm unique in this form or fashion. That we got the end of the year, and for some reason, all of the things that I've waited all year to do have to get done now. And it's not because it's the end of the year so much; it's the holidays. We just have this is the time where there's a lot of task-oriented things we must get done,
like what?
Christmas shopping,
okay,
cleaning up. Getting decorations up. There's all these things that we don't normally do in July.
Okay. So
we
holiday though related. Not
yeah. Okay. But because of the holidays, it puts us in a task oriented mode.
Oh, believe me, I know.
And next thing you know, I'm like, I got to repair that fence.
Yes.
And it's been like 15 months, and I'm like, I got to get that fence done. I got to start working on my taxes, even though they're not due in April. And next thing you know, you got a list. Every morning, I sit down, and it's overwhelming. I will tell you, you know, I'm sitting down going, okay, what do I got to do today? I got an interview I got to do today, which I got to do at 11 o'clock. I got to go get a business license, which can wait. I got to run to the grocery store, which could wait.
This is gripping radio.
Yeah, which is great. I got to set up a lunch date tomorrow with a client. I write everything down. And I also write things down so I can mark things off. And
yes.
I feel like I'm getting something.
Yes.
I got to get vaccinated. I got to get my booster shot for my three kids. And my oldest son is six, so probably ain't going to happen today. But I got that down on my list. I got to run to the bank. I got to do that. So and I don't normally do that during the rest of the year. But for this time, because I think everyone wants to start fresh, and we think that a lot of these things are going to go away. And it's just, you know, God, if you got kids and you're a homeowner, there's always crap to do.
That's right.
So there's always something, you know, I need to get to that. And then someone will come along in the family. When are you going to get that fixed? I'm like, oh, yeah, I got it. And then you write that down. Anyway, so I was listening to that. I don't want to talk about that. I'm just letting you know that. And that's why I'm a little manic today. So I'm having one of those days where I'm like, I'm knocking this shit out today. I am going full bore till 3:15 the kids get home, and I am going to knock all this stuff out. And chances are, after the show, I'll take a nap, wake up around 1 o'clock, watch Friends, and then pick the kids up and get nothing done.
And then bitch and complain about it the next day.
It's very anticlimactic. But my intention is good.
Intentions mean nothing without action, my friend.
I know, right?
Yes. in relationships and life.
We've got some really interesting stuff to talk about. Something that, you know, we're two men. or two white men. Mm-hmm. We do talk about black issues and interracial issues and stuff like that. We talk about women, things like that, and it's our opinion. And it'd be nice to have a guest on to give the other side, or at least you know, shed light on what we're talking about. Something we've been talking about, because we're all about the ladies. We're gentlemen. I'm divorced. You're still married. You're good.
I'm still married.
I made mistakes, and I've seen through those things, and I want to be a better man and a better father.
Good for
so
you.
I'm working on those things. It's on my list to do today.
Where is it?
It's about 19th. I'm not getting to it. Be a better man. Own up. Be more responsible.
Do you do that in your list? By the way, I do that in my list. So I'll have, you know, blow the leaves.
Oh, I got to add that email. I got to send it to our clients too.
Blow the leaves, send the email, contact, you know, pick up prescriptions, be more be more empathetic.
Yeah.
Then there's like six more things.
Yeah.
Believe it. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So we're coming out of this COVID thing. I know there's a new variant, but whatever.
Sure.
And I care. But we talked about the new norm. I think this is the norm. I think we're going to be getting boosters every 6 months, probably, I don't know, for the rest of our lives, but for a period of time until we can finally kill off whatever variant it is. And as long as we don't get vaccinated to a certain extent, we're going to keep getting variants. It's going to keep happening, right? And I was thinking about, I lost my train of thought here. I was thinking about what exactly I got to get done today. And at the same time, I'm thinking about the radio station, and I totally lost my track of thought here. But as we come out of the COVID thing, we have
this had to do with the ladies.
We've regressed in a lot of different ways. And so I'm reading this story that heels are out. So now there's this great debate on heels versus flats. Now we had this.
I thought it was sort of settled a long time ago.
No, because women are getting back to work. They're going back to the office. Yeah. And now it's huge in New York. It's huge.
What?
And so there's a group of women who haven't worn a bra in like 18 months and haven't worn high heels in a long period of time. And now they're having to go back into the office. They're going to Christmas parties. They're doing things for New Year's Eve. They're doing these things, and they're having to put these stilettos back on. And they're like,
well, they're not having to.
Well, they feel like they do.
Yeah.
But they're not. And good. So there's this whole new fashion coming out in New York with women wearing flats.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because it's about a 50-50 split. I would think that all women would go, the hell with this, I'm in.
Yes.
Because a lot of, if you don't wear, and I didn't realize this, if you wear stilettos for a long period of time, we said this, I don't understand. I know women do it to look nice, and we appreciate it as men. Right. There's nothing sexier than hearing a sound of stilettos walking down an empty hallway. I mean, that is like rocking. I love that. I can hear that click, 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 and it's like, oh. Much like flip-flops. I hate flip-flops.
Why?
Because they hear that, it just sounds like sweaty, hot feet on something. The sound of a sandal doesn't sound good.
Yeah, okay.
But the sound of a stiletto is like, stiletto is a musical term.
Yeah, but nobody even wears, are you talking about high heels in general or stilettos? I mean, my God.
Both. I mean, women love stilettos. And so a lot of women are looking forward to putting these stilettos back on because it makes them feel sexy. It makes them feel important. It makes them feel empowered. It gives
them
height. It makes them walk better.
Go find them.
It hurts their feet like hell.
Go find them.
Okay. Well, I'm just telling you, and based on the research I did this morning, it's about a 50-50 split. There's a lot of professional women like, you look like crap wearing flats. You can't pull that off because clothes make the man, stilettos make the woman. And so I'm like, I don't know why the hell you do it.
Right.
I'm like, what are you doing? Because it just looks incredibly painful. Now, a lot of women, like you don't wear a pair of cowboy boots for men for like a couple of years. It doesn't feel right. You put them back on.
Try dress shoes.
Yeah. Right.
Just
that's it.
Cram men, your toes into the.
Men hate dress shoes. You know, you haven't worn them and your feet hurt. Like, you know, and you're going to a wedding. Like, I haven't worn those in 3 years.
That's right.
So that's what women are faced with. And so now women are faced with, do I want to look good and dress the way I used to? Or do I want to fly in the face of that and go, you know what, I'm done with that.
Still
a lot, and I'm telling you, man, if we could get some comments on here, it's about a 50-50 split, and women are infighting. They're like,
no,
listen,
just, yeah, I mean,
because the stiletto look.
Now, you're saying stiletto. Stiletto is a very,
well,
you're talking the, high heels in general? Because stiletto
yes,
is.
I'm saying high heels in general,
okay,
but they use the word stiletto in the article.
But, you know, stilettos are the, like, heels of the heels. They're the
yeah.
But because listen, you got a 9-year old. I have two women in my family, yeah. And first of all, the whole discussion about heels, and even my 20-year old,
yeah,
is she'll wear heels,
yeah,
but it's got to be comfortable heels. And there are, you know, there's wedges.
Good luck
and
with that.
But at the same time, I mean, I know Jules has pulled off, and she's done it, and she owns it. I mean, she's 56 years old, but she's now pulled off sort of, I'm going to call it this, but the Ellen thing. She's got rocking tennis shoes on. She's wearing every kind of tennis shoe, and she, you know what? I'm 56 years old. I'm married. F you. I look great. And yeah. I've told her. I've said, you know, I think the shoes are killer. They look absolutely fantastic because it's a little, you know, it's a jazzy little look. She wouldn't wear it going out to a Christmas dinner.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
But also now
there are some areas where you can't.
Well,
pull
that's
that
like
off.
You and I wearing. It would be the same thing as you and I wearing shoes like this
yeah.
to go to a black tie.
Well,
affair.
We're seeing that now in men's suits.
Yes.
If you watch ESPN, guys, everyone's dressed yeah, well, up. They're wearing the shoes.
Yeah.
And it takes a special dude to pull that off. By the way.
Yeah, because most of them look like schlumps.
Yeah.
Part of it is they're...
Most of them, I think most of them look pretty good.
No,
but most
they
of them are thin,
good.
They're fit, they look good.
And, they look good, yeah. But the shoe thing look good.
Yeah.
It never ceases to amaze me, because you said it, where does the demand for the fashion come from? Who is who's driving the, you need to wear Spanx?
What's amazing to me... is this high heel stiletto thing is coming from women.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Men are like, just
yeah,
like
out.
The holding out for hope and
yeah,
hoping
we'll
the best
out.
Because
stay
they know
out.
It looks
yeah.
great. 2020 was the year women stopped wearing bras, quit dyeing their roots, and trade their stilettos for sneakers.
Yeah.
But now with offices reopening and parties and weddings back underway, it's the moment of truth for women who claim to have ditched their high heels for good. So far, it seems that quite a few reformed heel wearers we're sticking to their word. They plan to stop suffering for fashion, according to a recent Amex Trendix survey, a trend index that tracks consumer spending. Female
yeah.
respondents were twice as likely to say they were excited by comfortable shoes versus pairs suited to professional
yeah.
dress. Yet so many women post-COVID out at night wearing their sensible shoes don't look good. Personal shopper Mona Sheriff wrote on her Facebook page yesterday, "Please, ladies, put your heels back on. You look like crap. Yes, we noticed, and no, it doesn't look good." Now, the pictures they've got here from Shanita Shayak and Haley Berry and
yeah.
Nikki Hilton, they're wearing jeans.
Well, that's
they're wearing jackets. And again, you're talking about people that they're fashionable. They're on the front edge of fashionable, and certainly we're in Birmingham, so we're about 4 or 5 years behind
Ten.
The trends.
Yeah,
they're rich. They can wear whatever the hell they want.
But see, that's so interesting. So, but you're right. But that's
Ellen can pull it off because she's got $80 trillion. She can do whatever she wants. She can be as comfortable. And to a point, your wife, who's a
yeah.
very successful psychologist, you guys are pretty well off. You worked very hard
but it's
to get
got,
to where you're
not
at.
The money
she can
part.
Do that, and she's.
But it's not the money part, right? It really isn't the money part.
Well, sometimes it is because
Why?
it's a power thing. You have to have a certain look.
Yes, I agree, but I don't think it's the money part. I get the power part.
Yeah,
it's the more it's.
She continues in her sartorial rules for lockdown need to apply to regular life. New York City and events are coming back and women are out in nice clothes. And then I look down, there are really ugly flats. It ruins the whole thing. There is no attractive flat. She ranted, yep. Why are you doing this to yourself? To heal or not to heal is what she wrote.
So, God, here we go again. Curry and Claypo going down a rabbit
yes.
hole of topic that we know nothing about, and we're going to go there. But I will tell you this. Again, coming from a family of two women,
yeah.
there is discussion. In fact, God, this weekend, went shoe shopping with my wife and my daughter. Yeah. But I will tell you, I learned a lot.
Yeah.
There are flats. Then there's a slight heel.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
then there's like wedges. Mm-hmm. And then there's the full... cram your toe uncomfortable, right?
Yes, yes.
So what I'm hearing a lot more of, and I've seen this in my wife's shoes. My wife has some pretty cool shoes. Forget the tennis shoes. She's got some pretty cool shoes mm-hmm. that are women's dress shoes that have a heel to them.
Yeah.
But they're not cram your toe stilettos.
Yeah.
Right? And I've asked. I'm like, are those because they don't look comfortable?
Yep.
They don't look. She's like, no, these are very comfortable.
Uh-huh.
So to me, it's like men's dress shoes. Men's dress shoes don't have to, by definition, be totally uncomfortable.
Yeah,
cowboy boots the same thing. So like to me, if you're trying to be sexy and you're doing that, and you got your Spanx on, stilettos, you got your hair pulled back, so much make, and you're completely uncomfortable, that's great, but you don't, we talked about, at least you don't need to do that. There's a far cry between that and going out looking like.
And having a 9-year-old, and I will certainly expound on that, having a 9-year-old, she likes to wear heels because she knows when she's wearing heels, it's something special. And she, even though it hurts her feet,
right?
I get to wear my heels today, whether which it's for school pictures or yes. father-daughter dances.
Yeah.
And so, but a lot of women wear those types of shoes every single day in the office because it's a look. I think men are, this is another one of those things where it's better to be a man than a woman because so, men always have comfortable shoes because the whole thing is the point. If you have a pair of cowboy butt,
well, the point in the
heel. But I mean, you could wear heels or wedges. Something that's two or three yes. wedges, two or something, yep. 2 or 3 inches high.
That's what my wife does.
And if it's open toed or it's square,
yes,
you're good to go. Your toes are thanking right. you. But and according to this article here, and it makes sense, it's the narrowing
yes.
of the body. And I'll go back to Barbie dolls. Barbie dolls wear high heels.
Yeah.
Every Barbie doll wears high heels. Every Barbie doll I've ever seen comes in high heels. And it's a narrowing look. It narrows the leg. It makes yeah. the leg it makes the leg look bigger and better. It makes it look longer.
And I will
tell you right now, and I'm only speaking for men, and men will and every guy watching right now and listening to Tony Curry Radio on the Tony Curry Radio app will agree with me. There is nothing more than when a woman's wearing a skirt, a nice short skirt. A professional nice skirt or a flirty nice short skirt and wearing flats. The woman who goes and yep. changes her shoes at lunch to walk yep. around the parking lot.
Yep.
You're like, damn, she looks so good walking in. And now she's got her tennis shoes on. It ain't a good look. I understand she's got to be comfortable because she can't walk around the parking lot in stilettos. But I'm telling you, it is a powerful thing. And we yep. also know because of past conversations, a lot of women don't dress for us. They're dressing for themselves, and they're dressing for other women because they want to outdress. They want to look good for their friends, and they want to look good.
I know, but the underbelly of that, see, this is the part where to me is just fascinating. So the female-to-female competition, I'm dressing to sort of outdress you. The origin of that is us, is males.
How's that?
Because it's who defines what looks better. Because it's all about attraction. It's about attraction.
That's the amazing thing about what we're talking about here. This is all women.
But that's what I'm saying. But there's no men in this article. You got to go deeper. You got to go deeper than this. It's about attraction. So if one could imagine in a world where in a straight world, heterosexual world where flats were seen as appealing.
Yeah.
You can imagine that flats were seen as appealing. They were barefoot. It's close to barefoot. You don't like.
I think most men would appreciate bare feet than flats.
Well, Baywatch. They don't wear high heels. Yeah, Baywatch.
but they're on beaches. You know, they have to run.
Could you see them in stilettos on the beach?
That'd be rocking. That'd be unbelievable.
I think that again, it's this generational, long term. Where is this thing coming from? And you talk about women versus women, but it's women versus women because, like, it's why do men wear dress shoes? If it was up to us.
We wear dress shoes because we have to.
Why? Why do we have to?
Well, we feel like we have to.
Why?
Because you're going to a funeral.
Why? Yeah. But, like, I mean, that's to me, the point is it's being driven by.
We call them nice shoes.
We call them nice shoes.
We don't call them dress shoes. No. I have to put my nice shoes on. Kids hate that crap. I hate having to go spend $120 for a wedding because you're going to wear them one time, and I know like hell you ain't ever going to wear the shoes.
I think this is driven by sexual attraction, and it's generations and generations of that. I mean, so again, if there was this declaration that, well, look, we got it now, mom jeans, dad jeans, right? All of a sudden, somehow that's become yeah. sexy. And that's all I'm saying
is there some power play in the idea that a woman who can wear stilettos and or high heels and she wears them every day to the office that she's it, man, because she's in an uncomfortable situation. It's not she's so used to wearing them. There's something obviously more comfortable, more fashionable she could wear to the office.
Yes.
She's not going to be looked upon as the same.
But see,
I think I think it makes her feel more powerful. I think it makes her taller. I think
it does make her taller.
It's an I think it's an empowering thing, because I know a lot of women can't wait to get back in high heels, and I'm like, because it's just this thing about it's almost second nature, like putting makeup on.
Well, it would be, I mean, here it would be the equivalent of, it's not quite the equivalent because it's never the equivalent, but it'd be the equivalent of you and I have been dressing schlumpy, us and everybody else have been dressing schlumpy for however long.
Yeah.
Right. And while we're not excited, I don't think any man gets excited about putting a suit on, but there is a, you know, as people are emerging, men too. Oh, I get to dress. I get to look nice. I don't have to look. I get to look nice because there's a reason to look nice, right? When you were at home, there was no reason. You didn't need to wear your high heels. You didn't need to wear, you could dress like us.
Yeah.
Which I told you, my sole purpose in life, even though I have always had jobs from the time I was a teenager all the way through, with the exception of one point in my career when I was doing a lot of clinical work and I had to wear a tie. Mm-hmm. My whole thing was, I want jobs where I can dress comfortable. I want, you know, you're in radio, so you, yeah, you know. But I've always had that, and I've always asked the question. I would always ask the question, why do we wear ties? Ties make absolutely no sense. Ties are like, they're like, even Spanx makes more sense than ties.
Yeah.
And so my whole thing is, if they're uncomfortable, if they don't serve a purpose, which I still don't understand what the purpose is of ties, or jackets in the summer, why do we do it?
Because it's a power play and it looks nice. And you look better than people who aren't wearing a tie.
Which is, I mean,
you know, casual Fridays are relatively a new thing relative to time, 20 or 30 years ago. And that people, it was only on Fridays.
Right.
Then it was bring your dog day on Monday. And
it was casual Fridays, and then it was jeans on Fridays.
But I mean, I know some people that wear ties every day, and I have a respect for that and the fact that they like to dress to the nines because they take pride in the way they look and
which
how
I
they're
get
presented
you.
Themselves.
I get you. No,
and I
get
appreciate
you.
That. And when I see them without a tie, it kind of throws me off a little bit. Yeah. You know? I do. There's some people in leadership roles that need to be wearing ties.
I see. I think it's so interesting. I think, again, you talk about it in leadership.
I talked about our wedding.
Yeah. I know.
We went from wearing shorts to Hawaiian shirts to wearing slacks to Hawaiian shirts to wearing slacks with nice shoes to wearing slacks with dress shoes and the Hawaiian shirts to ditching the Hawaiian shirts to wearing a button-down white shirt to wearing slacks with a button-down white shirt, the nice shoes, and just tie, but they can do it loose. Next thing you know, was button, and everyone was like wearing suits and then right after the wedding, everyone changed clothes. But I mean, it was because of the look.
I agree.
And the respect for the moment and what it meant. And, you know, unless you're an IT.
Well, tech, listen.
And you got green hair and an earring.
No. And then there's a whole, again, you're right. It's by industry, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've always talked about you can never be, and people say you can never overdress, or you never can look too, it's better to overdress than, depends on your industry. You walk in a tech company, and I'm not talking 23-year-olds who are coding. I'm talking about a tech company, and I worked in a tech company for years. Mm-hmm. You wear a tie. The only reason you're wearing a tie is there's some gigantic presentation going on.
Yeah.
If not, you look weird.
Yeah.
I mean, you literally.
Unless you dress like that normally.
Yeah, but nobody. But again, it's almost if it's the culture. It's the culture of the company.
Mm-hmm.
So. I know there are companies here in town, for example, that for decades, I won't mention them, decades, women wore pants only, pantsuits.
Yeah.
Men wore suits every day. And I can think of two companies. And that was the way it was. And even as the rest of industry was kind of loosening up a little bit, you know, you'd walk into this place, and if you were going to this place, you'd be like, oh, crap, I go and I got to wear a suit and tie because it... And then they relax, and men can wear sport coats, and women can wear, they don't have to wear pantsuits, but sport coats. And then, like, I don't know, 3 years later or whatever, it was casual, whatever. And I'm talking, the rest of the world, casual. Now you go in, and now it's khakis and whatever. But you'll still see people in there with the ties on, because it's their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
It's their comfort zone. So I think you can look real, I sound like Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. I think you can look.
By the way, how's it coming? By the way,
I haven't heard back from. I'm going to do a follow up.
Please do.
I'm going to do a follow. You don't want to. You don't want to be too annoying.
No,
it's pleasantly
annoying. Yeah, yeah. Do your pleasantly.
I think that it gets to a point where it gets ridiculous. It gets ridiculous. Yeah. And if you're a man, if you're anybody, to me, I say the same thing. Obviously, I would appreciate somebody who dresses nice.
Yeah.
But and if you're dressing slumpy and nasty, it does say something about you, yeah. Right? But you care. But to me, when we talk about the makeup and the non-makeup, what do you look like? Like, I want to see you in your raw form.
Yeah.
It's great to see you made up, but I want to see you, not when you're dirty, but I want to see you.
In a relationship, I do, but not in the workplace. This is this is a workplace thing. I mean, for the most part, women on weekends aren't wearing stilettos.
Right.
When they're out gardening, they're not wearing. I'm talking about fashion. I'm talking in the workplace. For the most part, we're talking about a workplace thing because we're talking about going back to work and going back in the office.
You're making a good point. Listen, our local news anchors, they're all wearing, for the most part, they're all still wearing ties.
Well, sure they are. Yeah. You have to.
Well, no. So
and on ESPN, which is sports, right. For God's sakes, they do too.
That's true.
When they have the round table, they're either dressed the nines with a vest or a jacket, or they're wearing a tie.
No, you're right.
And I don't think that's management. I think that's they want to be respected and they want to look professional. And I think stilettos and high heels are a professional look. It's sexy too, but I think it's a professional look that a lot of people feel like, do I really want to go there? You know, sometimes when you see someone dressed to the nines and you know they're uncomfortable that way, we appreciate that.
Yeah,
and I think that works in business. I think that works.
You cleaned
in getting,
up nice. We always say you cleaned up nice.
Yeah,
yeah. That's, why are you dressed like that?
You've showed respect to me, or a client, or a business meeting, or a party,
absolutely.
Or a wedding by dressing nice for me, and
absolutely.
I appreciate that.
No, absolutely.
And so, if women are going to revert to not wearing bras or stiletto heels, then it depends. I think it depends a lot on the business you're in, obviously.
Yes.
But if that's what you are normally wearing in the office place, I think it's probably best to go back to that way.
Or, so one of the things that I've been talking a lot about with my clients who are going back is, and this is not just dress, setting new norms for your, like, so everybody's been, many people have been out of the office, they've been virtual.
Yep.
A lot of people are coming back.
Yep.
And you hear a lot of people like, oh God, it's not that I don't want to come back. I don't want to come back and have to go to 17 meetings, right?
Yeah.
Or I don't want to come back and have to deal with the office, whatever crap. Or I don't want to come back and have to be there at this exact time.
Mm-hmm.
So and so some of the conversations, or I don't want to go back and have to answer all my emails, my 5,000 emails within 24 hours.
Yep.
And so I always ask this question. I was like, well, is that a management expectation?
Yeah.
Well, no, that's just what we've always done.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm telling my clients, well, you're in a really interesting place right now, aren't you?
Yeah.
Because you get to come back and there are only the old norms.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is an incredible time for people to set what they want to do, how they want to run their business, or how they want to be in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
But we've never had that before.
Yep.
Like we've never had the break.
Mm-hmm.
So like, don't go back and just be uncomfortable, physically uncomfortable, work uncomfortable, all this kind of stuff, because that's just the way you did it.
Yeah.
Makes absolutely no sense.
And I think because people did get comfortable, we saw people wearing shorts with along with the suit ties or whatever they had to do,
we talked about this. One of the biggest challenges for businesses, business owners, is this whole thing about we got to have everybody back in the office. And we've talked about this a million times. We've talked about it. There's a lot of companies who are a hell of a lot more productive. And now the question is, okay, you're bringing everyone back in the office. Why? Because you still, and then you're bringing back the office and you all got to look a certain way. Why? And then the my favorite one is we got to have all these meetings.
Yeah.
Why? And if you talk to some high level executives, because that's the way we've always had it. I call bullshit on that.
Well, it depends on whether their business is successful.
Well, no, I'm saying
if it's worked in the past, and that's the way it goes.
It's worked in the past.
Yeah.
It's worked in the past, but it's also worked in this recent past. Without doing any of that.
Yeah, we also know that people are going to work the least amount to get the most output they can get in whatever they do.
That's a smart way to do things.
Unless it doesn't work.
If it doesn't work.
And we're seeing a lot of people say, I work better from home. They're like, no, you don't.
Well,
you work better when you're around this creative source and your numbers are a lot better. And
now,
I'm
if your numbers,
of,
but it, you make a good point.
Yeah.
If you're
a lot of people.
No, but if your numbers are better.
Yeah.
I'm just, I think that we have got, we are, I'm gonna say, we're sheeple. We're absolutely sheeple, and we're in a time now. Look, people are protesting about freaking everything,
yep.
Right? My body, my vaccination, my whatever. So fine. Why don't you establish what you want to do at work? And to your point, though, demonstrate. If you work for somebody, you do have to deliver. Whatever it is, sales, but demonstrate, hey, look, I can do this this way, get you everything that you want and more. And I'm happy.
Yeah. The thing about when this goes for dates, professional, business, whatever, you can't overdress, but you can't underdress.
I think
that goes for dates, that goes for anything. A guy shows up with a shirt. I can't think of one situation in my entire professional career in 30 something years, 41 years, where I've seen someone go, wow, he's overdressed for this wedding, or he's overdressed for this meeting, or unless he's wearing a tuxedo.
No. But now listen.
I've never seen overdressed for a business meeting. I was on Radio Row with the Winfrey for 14 years for SEC Media Days. There was a guy that showed up every year in a suit. The rest of us were wearing what I'm wearing.
Right.
Now, we were meeting coaches, and why did you think we wanted to dress nice? Our boss would go, hey, I know you're outside. Look nice.
Yeah, look
when
nice.
I did remotes, when I first started doing bar remotes, I always wore a suit. When I was at Jitterbugs, I used to wear a tie.
Really?
And people liked that. I'm in Jitterbugs or listening to Double Dutch Bus, and I had a tie on. I'm listening to the Spinners, and I'm wearing a flicking tie. And people go, but you know what? It attracted people. People liked the fact that I dressed for the occasion and I took pride in what I was doing, and it made me feel more important because I was a host and I was on the microphone.
Well,
I was talking
to
people.
But that's not over. That makes sense.
Give
for
me
what
a situation where someone's overdressed for anything.
You go to a meeting where it is a casual meeting and you walk in a suit. You look.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not bad. No, it's not. It's only bad because it makes the rest of the schlumps look like hell.
You look like, A, you're trying too hard. B, you're out of place.
It depends on where you are in the company. If you're successful and you dress like that normally,
No.
Never seen it. You're wrong.
Now, compared to, if you're comparing that to, because you said you can never overdress.
Now, if you never wear a flipping suit and you're Bobby back in HR and you show up to a meeting with a suit on, yeah, it's going to look bad.
Right.
But I'm talking if that's what you normally wear and you normally are dressed to the nines and you look nice.
And you wear it every day, then absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you there. What I'm saying is for an occasion, well, but there are norms. So we were, if you started wearing a suit here every day, every morning.
I'm thinking about doing it starting.
I'd be like, what the hell's the matter with you? Like, you look great.
I'm a business owner. I want to look nice.
You look weird.
I think when I meet with clients, I have to make sure that I wear the jeans without the holes in the kneecaps.
That's what I'm talking. There's a stretch there, though.
Yeah.
Right? We've been on business meetings where we had to dress nicer.
Khakis and long-sleeve shirts.
And I've seen you put a jacket on.
God, I hate it.
Maybe that's why you can only handle an hour in a meeting. One of our friends from WBRC, general manager, dresses to the nines. Don't you think?
Yeah.
All the time.
Always wears a jacket.
Always has.
I think if you're going to go without a tie, you got to wear a jacket.
Oh, yeah, which is fine.
I mean, hell, there's restaurants where you have to wear jackets, for God's sakes. You're not coming to this restaurant without a jacket on. I'm like, I'm eating.
Right. Well, the whole jacket makes no sense.
Why is that?
The whole thing, jacket makes no sense. Here's a fatal flaw if you're in a relationship. Don't ever do this. If you are wearing a suit or a jacket in a restaurant, and men are always hot, right? Because
can't
you got the damn jacket on.
Can't take a jacket
and
off.
And the women are cold, right? And you always, and you say, at least I used to say, I was like, God, if I could just wear what you're wearing, just wear a dress. You know, I'm like, I'm, you know, sweating. Yeah. If I could just wear a dress. I'd be so much, you got sleeveless. I'd be like, we're wearing a tank shirt. And don't ever do that. You know why? Because they'll tell you, okay, then you're going to put a bra. That's fine, but put a bra around your testicles and put Spanx on.
Exactly. That's when you find the woman who's cold, you offer her your jacket.
That's right.
And if she's wearing your jacket, then you look like a gentleman. You're comfortable. She's comfortable. And you're being a nice guy.
That's right. You're not sweating. No, and that was your fashion segment from Curry and Claypo.
Happy birthday to, speaking of fashion, Britney Spears.
Wow.
She turns the big 40 today. I don't think she works anymore.
She doesn't
She's in Europe or something on another vacation, I guess. Well, she's got all that money she can spend now. She can do whatever 40. She wants.
How's J-Lo's older? J-Lo's like 50, right?
She's 50, 51, yeah. Aaron Rodgers also turns 38 today. Today is
How old is Aaron Rodgers? Sorry?
38.
Okay.
Today is National Bartender's Day. The Bartender's Appreciation Day. We love bartenders.
Bartenders work that
Today is National Mutt Day. I recorded a show yesterday for Dark Side of the Pooch, which will air on Monday with Dr. Rab Stewart from the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. That show, by the way.
I love that show. That's my favorite show.
We're getting about 15 or 16 emails, seriously, through the website, TonyCurryRadio.net.
Yeah, because
TonyCurryRadio.net. We're getting a ton of emails from people all of Fort Worth, Texas, all over the place about pet questions. We talked about ticks yesterday. We talked about larvae. We talked about dogs rubbing their ass on carpet. We get into some great questions. It's a great show. If you have a pet and you want to listen to some great pet stories and stuff like that, Dr. Rab is fantastic. That show airs every Monday night at 8 o'clock. Dark Side of the Pooch. Today's National Mutt Day today. I let him know, and he's like, rough, rough. Today's also Special Education Day, and today is National Salesperson's Day. I have a new form of respect for salespeople.
Oh.
I always thought, I was always fighting salespeople because in radio, I was programming. It was programming and sales. It was 50-50. We'd butt heads. Salesperson said, I've got a great promotion. We're like, we're not doing that because it doesn't fit our format. And then we do things on the air, goofy, crazy stunts. And it would piss the salespeople off because one of their clients were like, I don't like that. And so, and that's when radio was a blast. That's when, and we've done a great job. Our partnerships with Vitoro Health,
and
the Spy for Rents, and the Woodhouse Day Spas, and the Southern Precision Staffings, and the Budweisers, and the State Farms of Chris Doris. Everybody, we have great relationships with all those people, and so it fits what we do. And we've gone out there and we've asked them, hey, listen, you're a good fit for what we do here. We could sell this. But salespeople, man, and I've gotten to the point where I've never been a salesperson, but I could close a deal. Like a salesperson go, if you show up, I think we're going to close the deal because the radio person shows up.
That's the easier part, right?
Yeah, because I'm not the one asking for the check.
That's exactly.
Sales, man.
Sales is
one of the hardest things.
Absolutely.
If you're selling something like Bitcoin right now, it's not hard.
as long as you can explain it.
Exactly.
Or NFTs.
Yeah, the NFT thing has taken off. I can't believe
that
we're buying things that you can't even. I've read the NFT thing a million times and I still don't get it. And I can't believe that people are spending $75,000 for the recording of a guy passing gas. It's the most amazing thing. It's like, we have so much money. What do you want to buy today? I don't know. Let's buy an NFT of a painting that I can hang on my wall and tell someone it's real.
But you can't. Can I just tell you that I'm glad you said that. I have read the NFT articles 100 times. And it almost feels like I cannot. I get it. I get it.
Oh, I get it, but I don't get why you'd want to own it.
Because it is, you know what I mean? It's the collector. It's a different.
It's the collector thing. And there's a lot of people into it.
Well, because it makes sense, because it is, you're able to capture something. There is no such thing as a knockoff of it. There's none.
Yeah, but you're just saying the provenance that has to go along with that. If you say, I've got the first tweet that was ever tweeted. It's only as valuable as you want to make it. It's like my autograph of Frank Sinatra. Yeah, if someone offered me $5 for it, it's worth more than that to me. It's only worth what I'm willing to pay for it, like an auction or anything else.
Yes.
NFTs, what people are paying to have the original or a one of a kind, knowing that it can be replicated in any form or fashion. You can see it on the internet. You can do, someone's trying to NFT the original photo of Cheryl Teagues in the fishnet, and I'm going, you can see that. You can take a picture of it. You can tell your friends it's the first if you want. But if someone says it's the original, I paid $35,000, I think you're an idiot. I'm like, congratulations.
Because I think it's
unless you're doing it as an investment,
like
artwork, where you can turn it around and sell it down the road.
I think that's where the NFTs are. I think that's where.
Well, no one's going to turn around the first fart on. The guy paid $35,000 for a fart. And I'm going, am I missing something here?
Well, yeah, because it's. It is. It's the first fart. What do you mean the first fart?
Some guy sold an NFT of him passing gas on sound. I'm like, I can't explain it. I'm kind of like, well, it doesn't make sense to me.
I guess you're right. It's harder. The art part makes sense to me.
I'm understanding the Bitcoin part now, just because it seems like everyone's hopping on board. It's got celebrity. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to take over for the mighty dollar. I don't think it's going to. Although, I will tell you this. Restaurants right now don't need to be telling me that you don't take 50s and 100s. I'm seeing that everywhere I go. I was at Domino's the other day. My bill was $52.
It wouldn't take.
And they wouldn't take my 50.
Why?
They don't take 50s. Why? I don't know if it's because they're afraid they're going to get robbed.
Oh.
I don't know if they don't have the change. I'm like, as a business owner, go get $500 in change and put it in your bag. Can you break this 100? Now, the gas station up the street, they'll break my 100 every day. Well, yeah. If they'll do it, then why the hell isn't restaurants? Restaurants won't take 50s and 100s anymore. And I'm like, wait a minute here.
Will they take Apple Pay?
Sure, they'll take all kinds of forms of payment. But, you know, I will tell you this right now. I always feel better when I got cash in my pocket. Because I know that I've got cash. If I need something, I can go get it. But no,
no cash,
you can't.
I don't carry cash anymore. Mm. It's all debit.
Protective Stadium doesn't take cash.
Oh, it's all electronic?
Yeah.
If
someone wants to give you money for something.
You're right. No, I understand that. Yeah, no.
I want to buy your service. You should make it as easy as possible to take any form of payment. I'm not talking about like a diner's card. I'm talking about you should be able to take Visa, MasterCard, Discover card, cash, if you want to stay in business.
You know, but you know why? Now, the cash part makes sense, but you know why with the credit cards. The different credit cards have different transaction fees.
I realize that. Right? I realize that. But I mean, it's a convenience thing. You know what? It's the same way as like standing in line to pay. I hate when I'm standing in line and I've eaten something and I have to wait 10 minutes to pay you.
Yeah.
There should be two people working there to take my money because I'm wanting to give you money.
Right.
So it's like, hey, you owe me $300. Get me tomorrow. No, I'm taking it right now. I don't get that. That's the old man of me coming out. Probably need to bury some gold.
Can't borrow 20 bucks?
No, like I haven't. Something going on in New York, and this kind of hits hard and at home for me because I've been through the process. I do not get it because it just flies in the face of what hope is all about. Okay. About being better. We talk about the Jimmy Hill Mission all the time, the official charity of Tony Curry Radio. I reached out to Michael Coleman this morning. I want to grab some lunch for the next week, and it's a wonderful organization that helps people. 90% of the people that go through the homeless situation have some type of addictive property. It's not always about losing your job and just trying to get back on your feet, but then they will help you vocationally, mentally, physically. It's great. You can go to our website at TonyCurryRadio.net and donate, and they're a wonderful organization, and certainly around the holidays, it's a tough time for a lot of people. Smoking crack cocaine is now officially sanctioned at the safe injection sites. Mayor Bill de Blasio brought to Manhattan this week in a move that's infuriated the center's neighbors and has at least one business owner packing his bags. People are allowed to bring the substance of their choice that they prefer to use here and are permitted to consume the substance in a manner of their choice. We're there to make sure that no medical emergency occurs and to connect them into care if they need that, the director said, Kalen C., adding that many of the clients use drugs laced with fentanyl, including heroin, crack, cocaine, methamphetamines, amphetamines, and K2. It's a non-for-profit. It's one of two in Upper Manhattan that's become the country's first legal shooting galleries. They call them shooter galleries that opened on Tuesday. They have had an immediate effect, but maybe not the one that de Blasio has just 4 weeks left in office was hoping as a business owners were still left trying to dig out of the pandemic. They got all these businesses around.
Yeah.
You got all these people bringing their crack and whatever you want to do. Mushroom, whatever you want, you can break it there and you can use it, at least according to New York state law. It is illegal, federally speaking, but Joe Biden hasn't spoken about this yet.
This is different than the safe. You said, because this is part of the safe needle, safe injection. I mean, there are places all over the country where the idea is if you're addicted to heroin or whatever, we want you not to develop infections, et cetera. So we're going to, you know, distribution of needles.
It's taking the safe needle thing to another degree.
Yeah, that is.
Because now you can bring your own drugs in and use them safely. Now they're going to promote drugs, and people don't have to worry if they get sick or they're going to die because they're going to have medical people that are going to take care of them so they don't overdose and die so they can do their drugs again tomorrow. A shop owner said, this is ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense to me, another infuriated businessman said. Some people argue that drugs shouldn't be stigmatized. I disagree. The mentality needs to be that drugs are evil, drugs are criminal, drugs will kill you, not drugs are okay to use in a controlled environment. Mm-hmm. What kind of example does it set for my daughter when she sees people walking out here all wobbly just having shot up with bags of free needles in their hands? Mm-hmm. I know that drug use is a huge problem right now, that drugs are easy to get from dealers. I even know a few dealers myself, but I think the criminal aspect keeps the number of addicts from being a lot higher. Also, I'm not sure an injection site is the best thing for my community. People who shoot up inside here tend to hang around, kind of like people outside a bar on a Saturday night. These aren't the kinds of people you want hanging around your block. Goes on to say from de Blasio in his office, it's a good program. It's not just a place only to shoot up and smoke crack. I can't believe we're saying this.
Right.
They provide more than that.
Okay.
Longtime addict Julio Torres said, who's now part of his drug task force, de Blasio and his health officials have touted the life-saving effects of the centers, but when asked by the Post on Wednesday, they couldn't cite any specific studies backing up that claim.
Yeah.
A rep for the City Health Commissioner, David Koshy, later said in the Post in a 2021 article in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine that was inclusive about such sites' effectiveness. For people who inject drugs, supervised injection facilities may reduce the risk of overdose morbidity and mortality and improves access to care while not increasing crime or public nuisance to the surrounding community. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I so both sides, right? If you're a...
We're giving up.
No, we're not giving up. I mean, I understand the business owners. This is where you get your debates all the time about halfway houses and transition houses, right? Oh, we don't want that in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
Right? So
let's forget about the neighborhood businesses.
Okay.
Let's talk about the whole idea of allowing people to bring the drug of choice into this place and do it safely. You've lost hope. There is no drug addict that wants to remain a drug addict. There's not. They may think so.
No, right.
And at one point in time, when you want to get better, it's ultimately, okay, I have a problem. I have an issue. I know this is wrecking my life. We know that.
Yeah, okay.
There's no drug addict that's going, this is great, and I'm good to go. Even Billy Flippin' Idol, who could shoot up drugs all day long and be fine financially, but it...
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Okay, absolutely.
We can say that. There's nothing good about drug addiction, period.
Right.
Nothing.
Because by definition, what you just said, drug use, people can make the argument, I enjoy it, it's fun, blah, blah. When it crosses over to addiction, right, or dependency... It by definition, now it becomes a necessary, it becomes necessary in your life in order to whatever functions. You can't do without it because it's the same drug.
Yeah. It's not a dependency. It's an addiction.
Yeah. Yes. I agree with you.
And there's a fine line there.
There is. And this, I'm not going to get, but this gets the whole thing about pain medication. And sort of, we've talked about this. Dr. Joe has talked about this. There are people who are addicted to opioids to control their pain.
Sure.
And they use to control their pain. And if you took the opioids away, not only would they have pain, they'd have withdrawal, et cetera, but it allows them to function better in society, not worse. So it's absolutely that whole, the addiction piece, to me, I don't like the word because it's more of, are you able to do what you need to do in life that helps you and helps others?
Sure.
And doesn't harm you or harm others, right?
Exactly.
But to your point, so when an addict, somebody who's an addict, almost by definition, it is impeding their life.
Yeah. It's incredibly difficult, whether it's drug addiction, alcoholism, whatever type of addiction you have. We know smokers, it takes an average of 9 times for someone to stop smoking before they can finally kick the habit. It's a vice. It's something and we can talk about marijuana. We can talk about any drug of choice, any vice, period. We talked about Tiger Woods and sex addiction yesterday. This, to me, is throwing the hands up and going, we can't fight this anymore. We can't help you. So we're just going to make it as safe as possible for you. And that does nothing.
But they're not saying, but listen, I'm just saying, listen, because these sites, I agree with part of what you said. But part of the other reason that they have these sites is these are places where when you come in, if you are struggling and you want to get help, the help is there. So it's not.
I don't know that.
That's what they're saying. That's what we're talking about. It says it in there. It is, because I've seen these sites. It's not the needle distribution thing. Is even the needle distribution thing, part of the needle distribution thing is giving people access. We're going to give you a clean needle because we know you need it tonight. We know that if you don't take it, you will. Okay. But at the same time, and it's not Jimmy Hill mission, at the same time, we have a treatment program and we can help you. If you are in a place now, we're going to give you this needle, we're going to do this thing. But if you are in that place where you are ready, we will help you because they're talking about it. And the reason I'm saying this is if it was only distribution and it was only come here, smoke, do whatever you want. And there was no access right there to care or to make that step. I'd be like, okay, that's ridiculous.
Well, there's not enough because you've got thousands of people that are utilizing this facility now. And there's not enough people there to speak to these people and get them the help they actually need.
We don't know
need.
That. We don't know that. No.
Well, I saw a story on NBC Nightly News last night. There's a line of people waiting to get in there.
Right.
We know there's not enough people to handle this. It's a non-for-profit.
Well,
there's not hundreds of people in there helping people. Hey, can I help you? And for the most part, if you're going in there to shoot up, you don't want the help right now. You just want to get high. So you don't feel like shit for the rest of the day.
Well, but you see what I mean?
So if that's the case, I
don't know that it's giving
it sends,
up hope.
I think it sends a wrong message. So the biggest purpose of this whole thing is if you want to get help, there are places to go to get help. Not here.
Yes, here. You could get help here.
You can get help here, but as a place where you can use anything you want, that's not the right message to send to someone who wants to get help. If you want to go get help, you're not bringing your own crack, your own methamphetamine to shoot up and say, let me shoot up first and then we'll get into this 12-step program. It doesn't work that way, Josh. It doesn't. It doesn't work that way. As far as in withdrawal and all those other things, horrible. I've seen people go through it. It's unbelievable.
Yes.
Some people go through withdrawal and they can't believe they're going through withdrawal. Like,
right.
I don't know why I feel so different. And it takes, 60 to 90 days for your brain to start rewiring itself so you don't feel those things. And it's a horrible situation. Cold turkey is always very difficult. There's a lot of programs out there when it comes to smoking at a much lower level, cut back from two packs to one pack to half.
Well, medical detox, right?
Exactly.
But here's the other thing.
Which I'm all about. Cold turkey is a rare breed. It doesn't work. Some people it does, but most people it doesn't. It's weaning yourself off. If that's a situation where you're shooting up five times a day and today we're only going to shoot four times a day or three times a day or twice a day.
But what about the safety part? I'm just asking. This always becomes a debate. It's always a debate, and I think it's an important one to have because part of what their rationale is, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but part of their rationale is there is so much crap out there that is – that people are accidentally overdosing. It's laced with all kinds of things. There's needle problems, and while drugs are a problem, this is also a problem.
Okay, so if we're gonna do this, why wouldn't the state of New York go buy its own drugs to make sure it's not laced and make sure it's safe for them to consume, and then invite them in?
Well, is that legalization?
What they're doing is already illegal on a federal level. Nothing's been said about it.
But
if that's the case, we're going to give you clean heroin. We know it's not laced. We're
I think it's
clean
a great
crack
idea.
And clean mushrooms and clean marijuana.
No, I think it's a great. I mean, yes, I agree with you. I agree with you.
And the money that and the money that you would spend on the street, you're going to bring it here to help fund our non for profit. You know what? I'm actually okay with that.
I agree
to an extent. The point here that's really weird is people are bringing their own shit.
That is weird.
And they know that if they overdose, there's going to be someone there to give them the
Narcan.
And I'm going.
Yeah,
wait
no,
a minute
I agree with
here.
You. That doesn't make. That sounds a little.
Because I can
sloppy.
Speak from experience that I. Do I want to do another one? I'm afraid I'm not feeling quite well, but I know I got someone here to take care of me. Sure. Because you're always chasing the dragon. All you care about is the next high.
Yeah.
That's all you care about. That's all you care. Listen, it's a disease.
Yes.
It's science. It is.
People
think it's a willpower thing. It's not a willpower. Nope. That's the first step in the 12-step program that you surrender to God and that you're powerless over whatever this addiction is. Now, people say, well, I said no yesterday. Well, that's fine, but are you ultimately powerless over it? In other words, can you say no from here on out? And the answer is no. That's why you're in that 12-step program. There's a lot of different programs. I
get what you're saying about this one.
I think it's really bizarre, too, that he's opening this up 4 weeks before his term's up as well. And I'm just kind of like, this almost feels like a pardoning of the turkeys. It's kind of like, well, why are we doing this now? New York's got some big-time, big-city issues, and it's unfortunate because it used to be just a wonderful place to go visit. I don't even feel comfortable. My daughter would love to go to New York. And I'm sure there's safe parts of New York. I know there's safe parts of New York.
Right, you can go.
But, I mean, every day I'm on sites and I'm seeing people being thrown onto subways and being stabbed outside banks. I'm going, what in the hell's going on in New York?
It's the greatest place in the world if you're from New York.
Yeah. like Texas and California, yeah. Right?
I'm telling you.
I'm all about sending messages, and I just think it sends the wrong message.
I think the message. Listen. I think
we're giving up on these people.
I think the message, if that is all true to that level, and there are no caveats that are not being written about, then yeah, it doesn't send. I don't understand it as a public health professional. I don't understand it. Right. It doesn't make sense. Bring all your own stuff in. And smoke here or shoot up here, and we just have people here in case you overdose? Because that doesn't, right? Yeah. That doesn't make sense. It's one thing about clean needles. It's one thing about making sure that the medication or the drug.
You know what this is? This is the mother who throws the party for her high school kid at the house. You're all going to drink. I don't want you to drink and drive. I don't want you to get in trouble. So I'm going to go buy the alcohol for you. And allow you to do it here because I know you're going to do it.
But
anyway.
They're not even doing that here.
Well,
that's what.
Or you can bring your alcohol to the house.
Yes,
you can do this. It's wrong. The thing is, and I can say this unequivocally, 100% of addicts don't want to be addicts.
Absolutely, no, I agree.
There's a stigmatism there. They've lost their job, their lives, their
Absolutely.
Wives. They've lost their families. They've lost everything. They don't want to be addicts. It's up to them to be. Constructive and responsible enough at one point when they can be, because they can at that point because they're out of their minds, to say, I don't want to do this anymore. And if you're saying, I don't want to be an addict anymore, but I can't stop,
right.
Which addicts can't, you're going to a place where they're saying it's okay to do that here, it sends the wrong message.
But wouldn't it be great if you said, if you as an addict, you did exactly what you just said, I don't want to be an addict. This is messing up my life, but I can't stop. I can't stop. Because we're not talking about drinking alcohol. We're talking about some drug. And it's hard for me to get the drugs, or I'm not sure that the drugs I have are safe, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Wouldn't it be great if you could go to a place where they weren't going to just take it away from you? What they were going to do is they say, okay, look, here's a safe place, and this is a place where we can start the process of you getting off those drugs.
Yeah. But if we're trying to end it, nip it in the bud.
Yeah.
Right? What does it say that there's 25 drug dealers standing outside this place knowing that they're scalping tickets?
Well, yeah.
I don't have to do it all anymore. I'm just going to stand outside protective life. Need four?
I know.
You got drug dealers standing outside the place selling drugs to people that, you know,
Right. It doesn't make sense. This could be done.
And the whole hope of reforming an addict and getting them back in the community like a Jimmy Hill Mission does is out the window here. Unless, of course, again, I haven't been in there. I don't know what's going on.
Right.
If there's therapists and there's people that are working,
setting up with rehab centers.
Yeah, say, listen, okay, you're here. Obviously, we have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say? You know, we try to end this right now. Now, if that's the case, but I can't imagine with 3,000 people a day going through here that there's enough personnel there to help do that.
That's the other issue. So here's the other issue, this is where Jimmy Hill Mission. And you know, this is what I've been so enthusiastic about with the Jimmy Hill Mission. By the time you're in that situation, it's a hell of a lot more than your drug addiction.
Yeah.
You may be on the street. You may have no money. You may have, you may have absolutely no job, right? So it becomes, it's not just, I want to get clean, but it's, I want to get clean and I don't have any place to be tonight.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's where a Jimmy Hill Mission or something like this that says, look, the first thing we're going to do is not rip your drugs away from you because you don't even have clothes.
I think
particularly for folks who are addicted and they've got all the layers, no job, no place to live. They don't know where their food's going to come. The last thing you want to do as the first thing is say, hey, by the way, we're going to take your drugs away. It's here. You need to shoot up, shoot up. Now, let's get you a place to stay. Let's get you some food. Let's get you some clothes and let's start this process. Again, Jimmy Hale mission. Now, is it going to work for everybody? No. It's why we have such a huge problem. But I do think that we've got to figure out a way where it's not just get yourself to rehab. Because listen, I know from both professional and personal experience, trying to get somebody in, and Dr. Joe will talk about it.
From a financial situation or just trying to get
them financial, logistic, everything. Who's going to pay for it? How is it going to do? How am I going to get there? All those kinds of things. Because I think we think, and again, a place like a Jimmy Hale mission is unique. There's not enough of them. We need 500 of them.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
I think we
need 500 Bradfords.
Bradfords that you can have access to if you don't have a job, don't have money, don't, you know what I mean?
And again, you're talking, and I'm an advocate for Bradford. I know people have been through it.
Absolutely.
I appreciate what they do.
They're a business.
It's expensive if you don't have insurance, they'll try to work with you. But I mean, I can tell you right now,
yes,
they'll be the first one to kick you out in the street if you bring anything in. And I know for a fact that they, when you go into their organization, they do an assessment.
Yes.
And they go, okay, you're moving away. And you're going to stay in this house with six other women or six other men in a house that we're going to keep a close eye. We got cameras on you the whole nine yards. You're going to dry out. It's going to be painful. But this is the first thing we got to do in order to – it's a tough love, but it works. It works 77, 78% of the time. It's an amazing success rate they have there.
Well,
but again, it's one of those things where it's always going to be part of your life.
Yes.
And it's something that you're going to have to work on. It's not getting your diploma and going, thanks, see you later, good luck in life.
It's diabetes.
You have to work it, yeah.
It's diabetes.
It is.
And think about it. Somebody who is severely diabetic, type 2 diabetes, so they're usually have obesity, they're diabetic, typically there's also heart disease, all those kinds of things. They don't just come in and say, take these three pills, you're good to go. No, if you're severely diabetic, you're going to have to take these medications. You're going to need to lose 50 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to need to lead an active lifestyle. You're going to have to, in addition to losing the 50 pounds, you're going to have to eat a certain way to lose the 50 pounds. And then you're going to have to eat a certain way and live a lifestyle that is totally different than the way you've been doing it.
Yep.
What does that sound like? And if you don't do those things and you don't do those things for the rest of your life, your diabetes will come back and it'll put you at risk of death.
Yeah.
You could insert crack cocaine.
Yeah. For sake of having a safe haven for people to use their illicit drugs of their choice so they don't overdose and die, and then allow them to use those drugs in that place and then have the narc or whatever it is in order to if there's a situation where you're allowed to come here and use your drugs, but we're going to work on.
I totally agree with you.
Then okay. It's tough.
Are you okay
outside the box.
Okay. Are you okay though with, cause this is in the next level. There are people who are very much against, clean needle distribution for individuals who are homeless. What is your thought on that? And I'm not talking about this, right? I'm talking about, You see, going out, individuals who don't have a place to live, they don't have money, they can't get their needles.
Well, it's kind of like handing out condoms at the Olympic Village, right? The kids are going to have sex anyway, so they might as well be protected.
Yeah, but that's different.
Are they?
That's different. They're not going to die.
I don't know. I think it just sends the wrong message.
So, but what do you do? Again, I think, because I think...
It's the risk you take. And
But does it create more of a public health problem?
There's always going to be those ones that just want to continue to be addicts because they just can't kick it and they have no help.
Wait, but so is it better?
Is it better
that they don't develop infections?
It's so broad.
Well, but this is where
clean needle distribution. It's a tough nut, man.
It is.
It's hard.
This is the challenge. This is the challenge of public health. Or forget public health. How do we take care of our population?
Yeah.
What we want is people not to use drugs.
Yeah.
the question then becomes, if they're going to, from a societal standpoint, is it better that they do it in a way that is, that doesn't produce infections, hospital visits, overdoses, or is it better, I'll just say it, is it better to let them have the infections, hospital uses, and overdoses, to be honest with you, to say, okay, if you're gonna become addicted, and you do be, if you're gonna become, I shouldn't say, that's bad of me, if you happen to become addicted, this is the path for
well,
you.
Well, that's where the Reformation needs to come in, because when you're an addict and you're getting high, you don't care. You don't care about the infections. You don't care about it.
No, you don't. I'm talking about us.
Yeah.
I'm talking about us.
I know,
is better?
But I mean, to get back to the clean needle situation.
Which is better?
You know.
Which is worse?
The message it sends just.
But I know. But what's worse?
Again, if there's a plan in place in order to help, and you're weaning someone off, I mean, I fully support that, because I know how difficult it is. But if you got someone that's continually just using fresh needles because they're available and they're not stopping, and if anything, they're doing more, because they don't have to worry about the infections anymore. They don't have to worry about the other things that were some of the drawbacks of being an addict. Then I think that sends the wrong message. This is really bizarre, because I've never seen a situation where you could actually bring whatever drug you want into.
Are there really drug dealers standing outside?
Oh yeah.
See, like, that's
weird.
Oh, it's
a great place.
No, but you that was in the article.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, cause something's not right. That's not right. You can't do that. That's not right.
I mean,
you're right. It's scalping tickets.
It is.
Well, okay. What? Let's play this out. If there's drug dealers dealing, sorry. So you can bring anything you want, illicit drugs, and there's drug dealers selling illicit drugs there. So you got the place, the people, the drug dealers there. Do you then have the drug vice squad busting the drug dealers at the place?
Right now, I'm not sure. I'm not sure they know what to do.
Who?
I mean, if this is my beat in Upper Manhattan, what am I supposed to do? Because I could bust every person walking into the place. Because I know every single person. This is
what?
This is trying to bust deadbeat dads by sending them free Iron Bowl tickets. You know, the whole thing. Show the BJCC that they send you a letter. Show the BJCC we're having a drawing for Iron Bowl tickets, and 2,500 deadbeat dads show up and they arrest all of their ass.
This is what I'm saying.
If this place is for people to bring their own illicit drugs into, you could bust every stinking person.
Well,
it almost sounds
drug dealers,
if you're an addict, it sounds too good to be true.
Well, and if you're a drug dealer, you could get the whole group right there.
Oh, what a great sight. The people are coming to you. You don't even have to go out at 3 o'clock in the morning and make deliveries in Upper Manhattan. You just stand outside the door and just deal as
your
own way.
Man, you know any drug dealers you bust?
Oh, yeah. And that won't change anything either.
I think you just throw in prostitution.
It's sad. Could you imagine a place like that opening in Birmingham? Oh.
No. We don't even, I mean, dude.
We don't have drug issues here.
We can't even have yoga.
We don't have drug issues here.
We can't even have yoga. I mean, like, that's where we are, is we're debating if yoga is evil or not.
You know what we do? We take all these drug addicts and lock them in a Baptist church and tell them to get right.
No, well,
you're staying in here until you get better.
Well, hang on.
We're drying out.
If we're going to do that, then we're going to do that. But by the way, when you do go home, you can have your alcohol delivered to your house. Because we don't want you to drive.
Well, why don't we have a place like this for alcoholics? But we do. They're called bars.
Well, no, but we don't even. But I think it's a great public health question about the whole alcohol delivery. Is that a bad thing? Does that perpetuate alcohol? Does that perpetuate alcoholism? Because if you're addicted to alcohol and you know you shouldn't drive, you don't want to drive, but you need your alcohol, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a way that it just comes to the house.
Yeah.
Is it kind of the same?
Yeah, if you're that dude waiting outside the ABC store at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning, waiting for the guy to show up to unlock the door, you got some issues. The whole alcohol thing. Listen, if you're Amazon and you're buying groceries, that's one thing. If you're a place that explains, I know there's an app for it, where they just sell alcohol, I think you may have an issue.
Well, and they deliver.
I think you may have an issue if you're on one of these alcohol apps where all you want to do is order just alcohol, because you can go to the store anytime and get your alcohol or go
well,
to
that,
ABC
that's,
store
but that's,
and get
but
it.
We're making it easier, yeah. But we also make it safer because now you're not driving.
But I would open one in Tuscaloosa.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, we got it here.
Yeah.
They did it during the pandemic.
Yeah.
We don't want you to go out because we don't want you to infect people. But we're going to have somebody come with a mask and they're going to put the alcohol there so you can just.
That's one of the changes during the pandemic that probably wasn't a good idea. Because it would have never passed if we didn't have a pandemic.
That's exactly.
But because we have a pandemic, we have to make it as safe as possible for you to get your.
That's what I'm saying.
Your case of
Schlitz. It's no different.
Yeah.
You could have a needle app.
All right. Later on tonight, Blues Almighty with Austin Hanks. I'm going to be his guest on his show. I want to tell you.
Okay.
He's got Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick on next week. I know, right?
This dude knows everybody.
I know, man. I mean, he's had Billy Gibbons on. He's had Blackberry Smoke on. He's had Matt Sorum on. The show's fantastic. It's one of my favorite shows. 8 o'clock later on tonight, I'll be a special guest on Austin Hanks' Blues Almighty, 8 o'clock tonight. Download the Tony Curry Radio app. It's super easy. Thousands and thousands of people have already done that. And, of course, the Damon Johnson Show, 8 o'clock on Friday night. We do Dark Side of the Pooch. On Monday nights, we do Adapt or Perish. Adaptogens, Dr. Alex Hubline and Dr. Josh Klapo do that show on Tuesday nights. We did Live Wire Wednesday last night. Unbelievable. Fantastic crew listening last night, so it was great. Talk about another one of our great clients, and we'll do some classic rock and the Curry and Klapo Show, which is on 7:30 to 9:30 every Monday through Friday morning. Could be seen on the Tony Curry Facebook page and on the Tony Curry Radio app.
Let me tell you about Woodhouse Day Spa. Oh, now is the time. The holidays are coming up, and you're sitting there going, what do I get my significant other? What do I get a work colleague? You get them the gift of luxury and self-care. Woodhouse Day Spa is a 5,000-square-foot luxury spa located here in Birmingham up at the Summit, 905-7676. They have everything you can imagine. Manicures, pedicures, facials, massages, special oils and ointments and lotions to help your body heal. That they're all about making you feel better. Their webpage is amazing. It's birmingham.woodhousespas.com, birmingham.woodhousespas.com. On the webpage, you can order your gift certificates for somebody, which are absolutely beautiful. You can make reservations for services. My wife has done that. And you can give the gift of self-care. Do it today. Again, you can either call them, 905-7676, or go to their webpage, birmingham.woodhousespas.com. That's birmingham.woodhousespas.com.
Hello, good people. Yes, here on Tony Curry Radio. You can watch us on the Tony Curry page on Facebook. A lot of people are like, why aren't you on the Tony Curry Radio page? We have more people on the Tony Curry page.
You're famous.
The Twitter page is one and the same. It's Tony Curry Radio, and I am Tony Curry, so it's the same thing. By the way, I want to thank Legend. Our good friend, I know Legend. I've done some shows with him. He's a blowhard, but he's very passionate about what he does, and he's a nice guy. And he put out his top.
I saw that
Legends.
You were on there, dude.
He knows I have followers. And then Jim Dunaway. Whatever. I don't deserve to be on this list. I appreciate it, but I'm like, whatever, Jim. Come on, dude.
That's Jim.
Take a compliment.
No one's
that humble.
Jim's pretty.
It works well for him. But I'm like, thanks. I said, I'm number four in the list. That means I make the playoffs. If I'm in the top four, I'm good to
go. You.
To be in the same breath with Tim Brando and Paul Feinbaum and, yes, Jim Dunaway. That was very, very nice.
That was very nice. By the way, you know, late breaking news. I'm going to talk about Dave Grohl, but we just, in the break, found out that the heel conversation will continue on local news.
Good.
At 9:30, we will be talking with Claire Huddleston and Mickey. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Claire and Mickey. We will be talking on WBRC about keeping up with the Joneses in the holiday time, and including, should you be going out and get yourself new clothes to go to the holiday party?
That's something I'm struggling with.
What, going to the party or getting...
Keeping up with the Joneses. Envy is one of those jealousy, envy, gluttony. It's like one of the seven deadly sins.
Oh, yeah.
Envy is a horrible... You got to be happy. I was trying to explain this to my 9-year-old daughter yesterday. She asked me another question.
Did she ask you the difference between jealousy and envy? Because that Jules had to explain that to me.
No, she. I got her off the bus yesterday. And I said, by the way, I said, are you still trying to figure out how we're related?
And why are you wearing those
My daughter said, you make my brain hurt because I can't figure out how we're related. You do so many weird things. And I started laughing. It hurt my feelings at first, but then I started laughing. And so I threw it back at her yesterday. And she was talking about how she had a friend at school that was not happy. And she could be a therapist. She's like, well, why aren't you happy? And she's like, oh, I get problems at home and, you know, school. I forget a friend. I'm being bullied, blah, 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 blah. So I tried to convey to her. I said, listen, I said, you need to realize at an early age, this is almost too big to understand, but I think she got it, that the only person that can truly make you joyous, happy is fleeting. Joyous is an emotion. It's an all-encompassing thing. If you're joyous, you're a joyous person. Everyone can be happy. You can be happy for a moment. It's like having bad moments, not bad days.
Oh, I love this. You know, you're talking some Brene Brown shit here.
Yeah, I know, right? So whenever people say, "Are you happy?" I'm like, "No, I'm joyous," because joyous is a lifestyle. It exhumes you. It's what you are. Happy is just fleeting. So I said, the only person that can make you joyous is you.
And did you pause?
And she goes,
did you pause?
Yeah. And she just kind of looked at me. She goes, what do you mean? I said, you have to make you happy. You have to do things that make you happy. I said, now I can make you happy and things can happen externally in your life that make you happy. I said, but you're the one, joyousness is bigger than happiness. And she's like looking at me and she's like,
Can I stop? When you do have these conversations, because I need a visual here.
Yeah.
You're 6'5" or whatever. And she's like 3'2".
Yeah.
Do you sit down with her? Like, do you look down? Do you sit down with her? Is she sitting next to you on the couch? Like, because these are some.
This was outside the car. We were just getting out.
Okay.
Yeah.
You holding her
hand? And I would have gotten down on one knee, but my knees hurt. So I just bent down. She was standing on my feet and we were hugging each other.
Okay,
as we got in the car.
Continue, because this is some deep stuff.
Yeah. And she's like, I said, you are responsible for your own happiness.
Yes.
I said, if you're here on earth living to make. To thinking that other people are going to make you happy, external things, whether it's your job, whether it's your people you go to church with, whether it's your brothers, your sisters, your teachers, whatever, and you're waiting for people to bring you happiness, you're never going to be happy. You have to be happy. And then she kind of understood. She goes, oh, and I said, you need to be happy yourself. You need to be joy yourself, and then you spread that joy out. And I said, it's not to say that other people can't make you happy. By winning the lottery, that would make me happy, right? And it may even bring me some joy. But I have to be the one that is responsible for my own joyousness. And I think she understood that. So
do you remember from SNL Deep Thoughts?
Oh yeah.
Listen, I'm laughing. I'm not laughing at you because that's some tough conversation. And when I mean tough, it's not because it's a bad topic.
Yeah.
But like, Brene Brown would be so proud of you because being able to have these conversations at this age about the difference between joy and happiness, the difference between or the discussion about where joy and happiness comes from. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, man, part of the problem we have in adult society is there's a lot of adults who absolutely they were never taught that. Their parents didn't talk about that. Forget all the taboo stuff.
You'll never have a bad day if you have joyousness. I mean, you'll have bad moments. You'll have things. And it's more so externally, you can deal with the challenges and the thing. Because life sucks. Life's hard, man. Life is super hard. There's some things that you can control. You know, I called self-control chaos. Those are the things that I create myself, that I've created these monsters, and then I get pissed off at myself, and I'm disappointed in myself, that I've created this thing that's turned into a big problem for myself. Then there's other things that I can't control that control me directly, and those are easy to deal with if I know that I'm taking, we talk about keeping your side of the street clean.
Yes.
If you keep your side of the street clean, then you can externally go out and try to help other people clean their side of the street, but even they have to learn to take care of themselves first. It's the whole love. I have to love myself before I can love you.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I talked to somebody yesterday.
If you're waiting in life for someone to make you happy, it ain't going to happen.
Well, and on the flip side, I talked to somebody yesterday about a relationship that he was in, a business relationship and a personal relationship. And one of his goals was to make this other person happy. I said, be careful, because your job is not to make them happy. Your purpose is not to make them happy. Your purpose is to be in a interaction with them, be a part of their lives in a way that helps them find joy. But if you're, you know, this is the, my sole purpose in life, you know, my sole purpose in life, I am here to make you, my love, happy.
Mm-hmm.
You're screwed.
This is the thing. I know you hate this. This is you complete me.
Yes.
If you need someone to complete you, then I ain't marrying you.
That's exactly.
You got to be yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I like the idea of the difference between happy and joy, because happy is a, like you said, it's a fleeting emotion. We go throughout the day. Mm-hmm. We're happy and not happy and not happy. Joy is more of a foundational.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a thing. And this is, I'm going to say this. I'm sorry. This is why Brene Brown came out with her new book about sort of Atlas of Emotions.
Yep.
To get at things like, how do you talk to somebody about the difference between happiness and joy, and where does it come from?
Yep.
Because if you think about it, what you talked to your daughter about, that whole concept that she's starting to grasp, is what causes divorce. It causes breakups of businesses, mm-hmm. family breakups. I mean, something that seems, that conversation with a 9-year-old is what 25 to 30 years later can either help save a relationship of any sort or destroy it.
Yeah. Speaking of joyousness and happiness, there has been none in the school shooting that I was listening more about this morning, and they're obviously, is the kid 14 or 15?
15, and they're going to try him as an adult.
They're going to try him as an adult, and under law for the state, and I think it's a federal law as well, any heinous crime and murder is the top of that list. They immediately could be charged as an adult. He was sent to from a juvenile detention home to the state penitentiary, where he's being in solitary confinement, and he's not in part of the natural conglomeration of other people. So he's being protected in that form or fashion. I think it's really interesting because we always want to point the finger. Why? Well, you know, was this kid mental? Did he have issues? Was he beaten as a child? We're trying to find answers, right? We're coming to find out that he didn't have anyone in particular that he was wanting to shoot. It was just random. So far as we know, and it just happened on Tuesday.
But it was, looks like it was premeditated. Lots of social media stuff.
He had made a video the day before that he was going to kill some students. Obviously, no one saw that. It was on his phone. He also was having a tough day at school that day. Mm-hmm. He was called into the principal's office. His mother and father, which is really interesting, because if they called me right now and said, we have to have a meeting with mom and dad today, we'd make it. But I know a lot of mom and dads could not go to school day of.
Yeah.
And have a meeting with the principal before the shooting actually happened. He was obviously very cantankerous. He was having issues. I don't know what those issues were. I don't know if he was blurting out things in class or whatever. Kid had never been kicked out of school, had never been expelled, didn't have any deficiencies as far as in any type of medical issues, mental or otherwise, as far as we know to this point.
Yeah.
We do know that his dad bought a pistol on Black Friday, and obviously the son knew where the gun was, mm-hmm. knew how to load it, mm-hmm. and so now they're talking about charging the father with these crimes, and I'm
negligence?
I'm all about it. Yeah, I mean,
what are they charging with? Like excess negligence, like gross. I mean, we're not lawyers.
Gross negligence, but negligence manslaughter.
Okay.
The fact that he
had
something to do, because obviously, and I don't know the relationship between the father and son. I have no clue. I'm just trying to think through, and I know the school district where that happened, you know, so all the parents are like, we never thought it could ever happen here. This is a close-knit community. I'm thinking about Oak Mountain or Indian Springs where something like that happened.
I mean, how many times have we heard that?
Yeah, and I'm thinking to myself, you never think, you know, your school's not safe or there's bad seeds everywhere. I'm just trying to think to myself, obviously, this is the first time where I've seen a shooting where it wasn't something where it was like years in the making. Like, he was a straight F student. He had all kinds of issues. He missed school. He was always an outsider. This seemed like a pretty normal kid. Now, the mugshot he took, dude, the mugshot, and this is very shallow of me, if you want to judge a book, I was like, this kid looks like this kid does not look like he's happy. He had this look in his eyes, and I mean, he's staring at the camera, and you're like, it almost pierced through you. It was scary looking. It really was. It was Charles Manson like, coming from a 15-year-old, which is really unfortunate. And he gave himself up.
Yeah,
I mean, he just gave himself up, and this kid will never see freedom again.
No.
And I'm just trying to think as a parent, what are the signs to look for? In your 14, and again, I don't know if this kid had issues before. For the most part, it seemed like, I mean, he had never been expelled, and for some reason on this day at school, and maybe it was because he knew he was going to shoot the place up. I'm just, you know, there's got to be a sickness there. There's got to be something wrong. Something's not wired right. Because kids don't just go get their daddy's gun and start shooting up their school.
No,
there's got to be issues.
Most don't. And I'm blanking on, God, I hate to say this, I'm blanking on which mass murder this was, a mass shooting, but one of the moms, I don't remember which one was, wrote an opinion piece afterwards that said, you know, my son is a killer, and sort of described the troubles that he had, the all the things psychologically that didn't raise to the threshold of, we can make something happen.
Mm-hmm.
They were in a, you know, they tried to bring him to therapy, and it didn't do anything or didn't do much. And it is that, and she said, we tried everything. He stayed in school. He didn't drop out of school, but we knew that he was going to be dangerous.
Wow.
And I was afraid of him. But even then, I mean, this gets to that. It always gets to this part of the conversation. I was afraid of him. He never beat me, but I was scared of the words that he said.
Uh-huh.
That's not enough to put a kid in jail, right? This is the whole idea of, where are we going to draw the line that says, you look like you could be a risk. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do something, even if it impinges on your freedoms temporarily, so that we can assure that you're not a risk.
And having two kids who have been through school and now in college and super successful, in Adair and Max, I get to know, or I try to get to know, my two sons and my daughter's classmates. They tell me stories, and I try to, and I know that one of Lila's friends has anger issues.
Yeah.
She tells me that. And I try to get as much information as I possibly can without being a helicopter parent. But for the most part, and my son Santo had a couple of kids that he used to hang out with that always seemed like they were mischievous.
Yep.
And I try to think about my brother and how mischievous he was, and he turned out okay. And I try to think about the, and for the most part, you know, 99.9% of the time,
that's right,
it's a phase, they go through it. There's one particular kid that I could think, it would not surprise me if he'd shoot up a school.
Yep.
I wouldn't say anything because I know him. And
but does he give you, is there anything without, is there anything that's tangible enough?
No, there's not enough.
Right. So you might think that this is a kid who probably needs to be in therapy, mm-hmm. or right. But he's
a good kid.
He's got
seven brothers and sisters. He's in the middle of the pack.
Yes.
He has a difficult time at school. He seems like he's very creative. He seems like he's always getting in trouble. He's smarter when he wants to be.
But do you see why? And I've been on a show, one of our local shows, and I've said this. I am a huge advocate for gun restrictions because, and it is a fact, if there is access to firearms, then there's a greater chance of lethality.
I totally agree with you.
Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have any guns or whatever, but like, I get real frustrated when people say, what is it? It's not guns that kill people. It's people. No, but here's the thing. It is a fact. In this case, this is a great example. If there was not a pistol, then the probability, and I always use this, the probability of that happening would have gone way down.
Sure.
Now, could he have got a gun someplace else? Blah, 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 blah. Yes, but that's...
But as a 15-year-old, it would have made it much more difficult. And he may have tripped up along the way.
Yes, thank you.
There may have been another 3 weeks before he would have done this, and something would have been seen or heard or maybe the video would have come out. I don't know what it was. He would have tripped up before it actually. I totally agree with you. And that's why I think, and not having known all the facts, and this is relatively new and fresh, not knowing what the situation was with his dad, I would like to think, and the fact that it was mom and dad, and I'm assuming they're still together, which is a good thing, I would like to think that a father would know. My kids know I have a gun. Mm-hmm. It's not loaded. They don't know where it's at. Mm-hmm. That was the first line of defense where I'm like, okay, why in the world did a father have a loaded pistol in his house? He had to have known. I would like to think he had known his boy well enough to know that he was capable of. Now, I know there's going to be outliers where, you know, they just go off and just methodically go.
Yeah, sure.
But I mean, there had to be some type of.
But that's that. I'm telling you.
That's a scary proposition. The timing was just perfect. Now, we may go back and find out that he's been playing this for a period of time, yes. But it seems like it was just so immediate and so.
To some parents' defense, a lot of parents' defense, they have kids who are wired wrong.
Yep.
Bad. They've tried all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And they get to this place where
our parents would just send you into the service.
Your parents.
I know a couple of kids. I'm like, you better get right or your mom and dad will send you into the Army as soon as you get out of
my
high school.
My parents always threatened me to send me to military school.
Military school,
what I didn't know, service. And I didn't even know what it was. I just knew it was bad. But if you don't do this, we're going to send you to military school.
And they're doing it not just for them, but they're doing it for you too.
That's right.
It doesn't always work, but.
It's a shame. When we were locked down, I mean, you talk about a natural experiment. Again, this pissed people off, but I don't care. Talk about a natural experiment. When we were locked down, there weren't shootings.
Yeah. No
shootings.
And for the most part, knock on wood, there hadn't been any in a while. If you go and just Google shootings, there's hundreds of them now.
Because they've been out of school.
Yeah. And you didn't have any shootings at homes either. See, kids are, which I'm kind of surprised.
Yeah, that's true. There
was so much virtual learning. I'm surprised parents didn't take out pistols when they had their kids at home. There was a shooting in Mountain Brook. Father got tired of teaching his 3-year-old.
They may have threatened. You know, I was thinking.
Do your homework or I'm going to shoot your ass.
I don't think suicides. I don't see. There's a lag. The problem is we're not done.
It's too late. It's too early.
When we're also not done. I mean, we're seeing the wave afterwards.
No, it's about a year or two out. It's all going to come back.
Okay, so can I tell you about Dave Grohl?
Yeah.
Because this is just like this. There is no way to recover from where we just were, the depths of where we were.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a shirt. Did you see that shirt?
I did. I got
cowboy.
I got one of those.
Do you get with the cowboy hat like that?
No, I have a real cowboy hat, but I have a real shirt like that.
Do you really? Don't ever wear it.
I'll wear it tomorrow. I don't wear it because it's really stiff.
Okay.
Have you ever had hair like that? It's a real cowboy hat. Okay. I can. You want me to look like a cowboy tomorrow?
Yeah, I want you to look like. So Dave Grohl.
I have to wear the shirt because it's December, and if I don't wear it, then I have to get rid of it by the end of December.
Okay, then is that on your list?
Yeah.
So Dave Grohl is doing the Hanukkah, whatever he's calling it, the Nights of Hanukkah. Each night he's doing a new song. Last night, so the night before was Copacabana, which we kind of didn't know what to make of that. Then last night, and I love Dave Grohl is so talented. He does a Van Halen. He does Jump, but it was like a Weird Al Yankovic video.
Yeah,
they were kind of like. Sort of kind of mocking.
They're all mocking, though. They're kind of in a weird way.
They were mocking, but there was no Jewish part to it.
Yeah.
I was so upset about that. Like, they got the Hanukkahs. They got the menorah.
Wasn't Eddie Van Halen Jewish?
No. Van Halen's not. David Lee Roth was.
David Lee Roth. Well, there you go. David Lee Roth. And he sang Jump.
Lisa Loeb.
Yeah. They're all Jewish.
Ah.
Yeah. Barry Manilow's Jewish.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. You just figured that shit out.
No, but the Ramones weren't. Were the Ramones Jewish?
Yes.
Oh, they were.
Yes. Joey Ramone's Jewish.
Is he really?
Yes.
You know, the Beastie Boys are Jewish.
Yeah, I know.
I need to do a show about all the Jewish
rockers. You should do Brass Monkey. That'd be great. Yeah, I still want to hear Dave Grohl do Dave Grohl's version of these damn songs, though.
Yeah, because he did it. He did
I mean, it sounds too much like the original.
He's a great singer. He's a great cover artist.
He is. I mean, we talked about him yesterday on the Damon Johnson Show. He's getting ready to unveil his top six classic rock trios, and ZZ Top's in there, and Cream's in there, and Rush is in there, and Triumph's in there, and Crosby, Stills, and Nash is in there, and King's X, and there's a, like 30 bands that are killer.
Yeah.
The Get Ready, his band is a trio. It is killer. We'll have that show next Friday. This Friday, we'll do another show at 8 o'clock. But yeah, we were talking about Dave Grohl, and I don't think a lot of people realize that Dave Grohl was in Nirvana. Nirvana, another one of those trio bands. Yeah. And
well, because it's almost a generational.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, when Paul McCartney brought Dave Grohl, actually, I think it was Paul that brought, he brought on the Foo Fighters for their induction to the Hall of Fame. He's like, you and I are just alike. You know, we were in a band. We lost one of our band members, and now we're going off and doing our own thing in our solo way. And the Foo Fighters just announced they're going to be touring in 2022. They're not coming to the South, by the way, which is unfortunate. But I guess for a while he was out of the Foo Fighters doing his own thing. I always thought it was really interesting when you're like the front dude, like Phil Collins, what makes you go back with a band? Like Damon Johnson could do the Damon Johnson thing, his own thing, but he wants to be with the band, right? He can't wait to get his band back out. By the way, December 23rd, he's going to be doing something called the Holiday Hangout, which is going to be a virtual acoustic set.
Very cool.
On December 23rd, continue to listen to Tony Curry Radio for more details on the Damon Johnson Holiday Hangout on the 23rd, and then he's going to stream it so you can get it on demand afterwards for the holidays. And he just released God Rest You, Merry Gentlemen, which is killer. He can sing, too. But he was talking about Dave Grohl, and it's kind of weird because you got these front set guys that can obviously go out and do their own thing, and like if I'm Peter Cetera with Chicago,
well, it's Don Henley
or Don Henley, and then you go out and you're successful on your own to the nth degree.
Yeah,
what would make you want to go back? And then you got to go out and you're going on the road. Now the Eagles were different because everyone in the Eagles was famous.
Right.
So, like, Phil Collins, Michael Rutherford, and Tony Banks, they did their own things, but not certainly to the level that Phil Collins. So maybe I should use Phil Collins as an example. But at what point do you go, I'm going on the road solo. Do you guys want to come with me? Does that hurt their feelings that I was in the band with you, and now you're going on the road? It'd be like Damon Johnson going on the road and saying, I'm not bringing the other two guys to Get Ready. I don't think he'd do that. But then if the guys go out with him, then it's not Damon Johnson. It's the Get Ready. It's Genesis if Michael Rutherford. So how do you do that?
Well, I was just thinking about that with the Phil Collins. We're going out. I'm going out. It's the Phil Collins tour. I'm going to bring you guys, but it's not Genesis.
When Phil Collins was solo, he was singing Genesis music.
Right. Well, Don Henley was too.
And Don Henley was singing not a lot of it.
No. No, he would throw a couple in there. And now when the Eagles do, but then they do everybody's stuff.
Makes you wonder when if Vince Gill ever gets out of the Eagles.
Yeah.
Will he play Eagles music?
Because he's part of the Eagles.
Even though it's just Vince Gill. I don't know.
Yeah. There's a whole thing about wanting to be back with the band. Maybe.
Sting.
Yeah. Right.
Sting did the thing. Were you ever going to do the Police again? You know, Rick Ocasek not so much the Cars because he wasn't solo on his own. When you go out and you're solo, it doesn't work. Then you go back to the band.
That's right. Right.
But when you're Sting and you're doing your own thing, what would make you want to get with Stuart Copeland and the rest of the guys from Police? Another great trio. Why would you want to get back with the Police?
You miss them. Right?
Is that it?
It's camaraderie. It's a team.
Even though you're successful on your own.
Yeah.
And you're out.
A different vibe.
Then you're out with this band that's playing all these Police songs that were written by other guys, but they're not out there with you. It's kind of weird. It hurt my feelings. All right. We're on every Monday through Friday morning between 7:30 and 9:30. You're going to hear great classic rock talk, great programs, brand new shows, episodes every single night of the week, 8 o'clock. Tonight, Blues Almighty, I'm a special guest. I'm recording an interview with him today. So I'm looking forward to doing that with Austin Hanks of the Damon Johnson Show tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. And, of course, you can hear all these things on the Tony Curry Radio app. And thank you for watching us on Facebook Live this morning on the Tony Curry page. Talk about one of our great sponsors, and then we'll do some more classic rock for you.
I'll tell you about Vituro Health, guys. We've been talking about diseases. We've been talking about things that'll take you down. Prostate cancer will take you down. Take down one out of nine men, but it doesn't need to. Cleet Walker, the CEO of Vitura Health, was just out the other day on LinkedIn talking about yet another new form of treatment for prostate cancer. Guys, there are so many different forms of treatment. You need to stay educated about prostate health and prostate cancer. Go to Vitura Health's webpage, VituraHealth.com, and you will get information about men's health, men's prostate health, and most importantly, if you develop prostate cancer, what your treatment options are, because there's lots of them. So again, the company is Vitura Health, and the webpage that you need to remember is VituraHealth.com.